As temperatures drop and days get shorter, we want to help you decide what books to curl up with this season, so it's time for Book Picks. This week, we're joined by Connie Brooks of Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. Hi, Connie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
This is the perfect time. You get a fire in the fireplace. You sit down with a new book.
Yes.
If the book stinks, you throw it in the fireplace.
There you go.
It's perfect.
I won't advocate that, but you could do it.
Well, as long as it gets up to 451 Fahrenheit, you're good to go.
There you go.
And, of course, it's almost holiday Christmas shopping and everything else, so it's about that time we talk books, and you have a great list here today.
I do have a great list. I'm excited to bring these books in and talk about them to everybody. So the first book I have to recommend to everybody today is a new book by Geraldine Brooks called The Secret Chord. And when I hear that Geraldine Brooks has a new novel out, I think that's cause for celebration. And certainly The Secret Chord is no exception to that. And her new book is absolutely stunning. In her new book, Brooks takes on one of literature and history's richest and most enigmatic figures, the legendary King David, who slew Goliath as a boy and went on to rule a united Israel. Brooks brings David out of the mists of myth and vividly to life, tracing the arc of his journey from obscurity to fame, from ostracized shepherd boy to famed soldier, from hero to traitor, and from beloved king to murderous, unhinged despot. In Brooks's fine-tuned story, we see David through the eyes of those who love him and fear him, from the prophet Nathan, voice of his conscience, to his wives, Michal, Abigail, and Bathsheba, and finally to Solomon, the late-born son who succeeds him as king and exceeds his greatness. Like the Psalms David wrote for his harp, The Secret Chord is also a masterpiece.
Well, this sounds like a ripping read.
It really is. And it's phenomenal.
And a movie, certainly, down the
road.
Oh,
absolutely.
So that's great. So that's an epic story.
Epic story.
Excellent.
Brings it all to life.
All right, I'll circle that one on the list.
All right. So next up, are you ready for a ghost story, Ray?
I love a ghost story.
Excellent. This is Slade House by David Mitchell. I'm going to switch into ghost storytelling voice here.
Oh, good.
If you travel down the road from a working-class British pub along the brick wall of a narrow alley, and if the conditions are exactly right or wrong, as the case may be, you'll find the entrance to a mysterious door, the entrance to Slade House. A stranger will greet you by name and invite you inside. At first, you won't want to leave until you find that you can't. Every 9 years, the door appears, and the brother and sister who reside at Slade House invite someone inside who is a bit different, peculiar, or lonely. A precocious teenager, a recently divorced policeman, a shy college student. But what really goes on inside Slade House? For those who find out, it's already too late in this thoroughly creepy paranormal tale.
Ooh. Yeah, okay.
That's a good one by the wood stove.
Now, is that one that would be appropriate for a teen to read, do you think?
I think so. For a teenager, yes. I would say yes. Yeah, I wouldn't go younger than that.
So I wouldn't want to read it to the little ones.
I would not, because you'll have some sleepless nights
ahead.
Right.
Well, we have that anyway. Okay. What's the difference? You know, as long as it entertains me.
That's right.
What else we have?
Next, I have another novel. This is The Muralist by B.A. Shapiro. In the years before the Second World War, painters of abstract expressionism like Mark Rothko and Jackson Pollock worked in New York City in relative obscurity, their contributions to modern art not yet realized. In Shapiro's new novel, a young American painter named Alizé Benoit works alongside Rothko and Pollock and others until she disappears without a trace. None of her friends and fellow painters for the Works Progress Administration know where she's gone, and certainly not her Jewish family living in German-occupied France, who have serious problems of their own. Fast forward to the present day, Danielle Abrams, the great-niece of Alizé, is a young researcher at Christie's Auction House, working on authenticating possible masterworks from the 1940s, when she discovers four paintings taped to the backs of several others. Could the unsigned discoveries have been painted by her mysterious great-aunt? And do they hold clues to what happened to Alizé more than 70 years ago? The story artfully juxtaposes Danielle's story with both the inner workings of New York's art scene in the war years and the growing and desperate refugee crisis within Europe at the time.
So that's something of a historical mystery, too.
It is. B.A. Shapiro also wrote a few years ago The Art Forger, which was more present day, but this one she goes back into the war years. And it's really, really well done.
It sounds fun.
It is. Another one of my favorites is Kate Morton, and I brought in her new book, The Lake House. And if you've read any of Kate Morton's other books, The Secret Keeper, The House at Riverton, or The Forgotten Garden, you'll recognize several classic Morton themes in her new novel, A Grand English Estate, Dark Family Secrets, and plot lines that connect and entwine, though separated by time. But each novel by Kate Morton is its own wonderful story, and The Lake House is no exception. One summer evening in 1933, after a large party on a grand English estate, the illustrious Etivane family discover that their youngest child, 11-month-old Theo, has vanished without a trace. Decades later, a detective from London visiting Cornwall stumbles upon the estate and, curious, reopens the cold case. The detective tracks down the surviving family member Alice, a now elderly, famous mystery writer who was 16 at the time of her little brother's disappearance. The cold case cracks wide open, bringing Morton's well-plotted mystery to a stunning conclusion.
So I love a good mystery, and we have some mysterious stories here. Are you, when you read for fun, do you read mainly fiction or nonfiction?
Mainly fiction. I do mix it up with a lot of different things. I mean, I read across a lot of genres. I love a good young adult story, but mostly historical fiction is kind of my area.
Well, we're talking today with Connie Brooks of Battenkill Books in our book pick segment here on a Tuesday. Any nonfiction for me?
Yeah.
I love nonfiction.
Well, I've got two for you. So the first nonfiction I brought is SPQR, A History of Ancient Rome by Mary Beard.
Now, what does SPQR stand for?
And I knew you were going to ask me. I'm not going to say it in Latin.
Oh, come on.
It's absolutely impossible, but I can tell you that it's the Latin abbreviation for the Senate and People of Rome.
Oh, nice.
SPQR.
And you won't try the Latin?
I'm absolutely not going to try
on,
the Latin.
Connie.
I mean, how many people are listening?
No one's listening.
No.
Go ahead.
Absolutely
all right,
not.
All right. So what's the book about? We know what the book is about.
Well, ancient Rome, of course, which was an imposing city even by modern standards. A sprawling imperial metropolis of more than a million inhabitants that served as the seat of power for an empire that spanned hundreds of years in a vast geographic area. Yet how did all this emerge from what was once an insignificant village in central Italy? In SPQR, classicist Mary Beard narrates the unprecedented rise of a civilization that even 2,000 years later still shapes many of our most fundamental assumptions about power, citizenship, empire, and beauty. Illustrating how a classical democracy yielded to an empire, SPQR reintroduces us in new ways to famous and familiar characters such as Julius Caesar, Cleopatra, Augustus, and Nero, while also including those overlooked in traditional histories, the women, the slaves and ex-slaves, conspirators, and those on the losing side of Rome's glorious conquests. Engaging and not remotely dry, SPQR is a big, hearty, and assumption-overturning history. Just like I like my nonfiction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I have, this is more, I guess you would say a travel monologue, but one that is very deep and very interesting. And this is Deep South, Four Seasons on Back Roads by Paul Theroux. Of course, Theroux is one of our best-known and respected travel writers, having spent many years chronicling the lives and lore of many different cultures across the globe. Now, for the first time in his 10th travel book, Theroux turns to his own country, yet sets out to explore a region, the Deep South, that may seem puzzling and foreign to anyone who didn't grow up there. He finds there a paradoxical place, full of amazing music and food, and yet also some of the nation's worst schools, housing, and unemployment rates. It's these parts of the South, so often ignored, that have caught Theroux's keen traveler's eye. On back roads and rural highways, he visits gun shows and small-town churches, laborers in Arkansas and parts of Mississippi where they still call the farm up the road, the plantation. He talks to mayors and social workers, writers and reverends, the working poor and farming families, those who never left and those who left and chose to return. From a reflective writer, this is a story about one person's journey into a land not his own and what that region can tell us about our country at large.
Huh.
Excellent.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun read.
Yes.
And lots of color and just...
Lots of deep reflection on what does this mean? What does the South have to tell us about everywhere in
the
country?
Have you ever had a chance to drive down there?
I've been to a few places in the South, not the places he's describing, but I have spent a little time in some of the southern cities, which I love. I adore the South.
And the back roads, also fun.
Yes.
So that's a neat book. Anything
yes.
for the kiddies?
So I have two middle grade novels. The first is The Blackthorn Key by Kevin Sands. This is a book set in the 1600s, and an apothecary's apprentice named Christopher Rowe must solve puzzles and decipher codes that somehow relate to mysterious murders that are going on in London. until he receives a cryptic warning. Christopher Rowe is happy, concocting powerful medicines and potions as an apprentice to Master Benedict Blackthorne. But when a mysterious cult begins to prey on London's apothecaries and his own master disappears, Christopher must use every skill he's learned to discover the truth and prevent more murders. This is a great adventure story for readers who don't mind mixing puzzles and a bit of chemistry with a good dose of the fantastic.
Ooh, what age group would that be for?
I would say the 8 to 12 age.
Really?
Set. Mm-hmm, okay. Absolutely.
It might be on my list.
Very good.
And finally?
Same age group, I have The Doldrums, which is one of my favorite words to say.
Yeah, good, good word.
The Doldrums by Nicholas Gannon. Equal parts heartwarming and zany, The Doldrums is just an all-around delightful adventure for middle grade readers. Our protagonist is Archer B. Helmsley, who has grown up in a house full of taxidermied oddities and treasures collected by his grandparents, famous explorers, who disappeared on an iceberg when Archer was 9. Archer's mother barely lets him leave the house, which leaves Archer longing for adventure. Luckily, he has friends like Adelaide L. Belmont, with a wooden leg, and clever Oliver Grubb, who help him hatch a rescue mission. It's a tale of courage and undaunted. It's a tale of undaunted courage set against Gannon's delightful full-color illustrations.
Well, that's great. And what a list today. Connie Brooks is from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. To learn more about the store, you can... Now, what's the website?
Battenkillbooks.com.
All right. Now, the list will be posted on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Connie, if I don't see you, have a great holiday season.
You too, Ray.
And read. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.